Welcome to the Health and Healthcare Forum. I'm Roberta Hall. Our series on health and healthcare features conversations about diverse health concerns. I enjoy these conversations, and I hope you do too. Comments can be addressed to me at rhall@oregonstate.edu. Today, my guest is John DiLorenzo. He's an attorney with a specialty in government relations and a long history of working with the Oregon legislature. So, welcome.
Thank you, Roberta. It's a delight to have you here today.
I always like to know how people got interested in healthcare, and in looking a little bit through your website, I hadn't noticed much about health, healthcare, and so forth. But you've been here in the state for quite a long time and kept your ears and eyes open, and so I'm just curious how you happened to get into this issue at this time.
I am a believer that the best way to have good ideas is to have a lot of ideas.
Uh-huh.
And I have a lot of ideas. Many of my ideas are probably not worth the time of day, but others are. And my view is that if 10 to 15% of your ideas are really good ones, and mm-hmm. you have lots of them, then 10 to 15% of those might actually be worthwhile. I enjoy nothing more than attempting to cobble together coalitions of people who quite often have disparate views to try to agree on legislation. And legislation is, you know, one of our legal specialties at Davis Wright Tremaine. So from time to time, I will generate an idea that I think is worthy of further study, and I put it on a list. And I have a big, giant idea book, many of which are not yet ready for prime time, I must confess.
I suspect that what's going on in the outside world influences when something's ready, too.
And of absolutely.
Course, this is, some might say, pastime, but still it's a very key time to be concentrating on this issue.
And for almost 2 years, I've been following the healthcare debate because I have a general interest in it, and I have been following it closer and closer and closer. And so I came up with a concept and worked with it a little bit, put it in my idea book, and every once in a while I would come back to it. And then spent a significant amount of time last year working with a bipartisan group of members of the Oregon Senate who were able to provide me access to the state's Legislative Revenue Office, which cranked out some preliminary numbers for us. I think the catalyst for taking this idea off the shelf was the breakdown of the federal healthcare discussion.
Right.
So there was a virtual breakdown of the federal healthcare discussion, which basically would have financed many other state responses.
Sure.
The Health Fund Board is already embarked in a discussion regarding what goes into a basic benefits plan.
And it has a deadline of something
it
like
does.
2014, is
yes,
that
it
correct?
Yes, it does.
To have a universal plan of some sort?
Well, a plan. It needs to determine what coverages would be considered essential benefits. It also has been charged with a number of other functions, including financing those plans.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a breakdown of the federal discussion. That coincided with a real severe polarization of the business community from the legislative leadership following the passage of Measures 66 and 67. And so I thought it would be very interesting to design a program that business could support that would provide a significant economic infusion to the state, produce many, many jobs, and provide for a pressing need, which is to furnish a basic level of health care to all Oregonians.
Mm-hmm. I'm from the Willamette Valley, and there have been many discussions that we've had with, of course, our representative, Sarah Gelser, but Frank Morse, our senator, has actually talked in more detail about a blended taxation model. And then, of course, there's Senator Bates from Ashland. And I know those two have been key. Are there others that you've been talking to as well?
Well, Senator Bates and Senator Morse have been very, very helpful in the development of this proposal.
Okay.
As has been Senator Montes Anderson, Senator Cruz, Senator Bill Morissette, and others. We really have a bipartisan group that is interested. Representative Mitch Greenlich, who is the chair of the House Healthcare Committee, is also very intrigued. We are actually proceeding apace with informal work groups to determine not only how the proposal might be funded, because we have a pretty good handle on that, but you know, how much we could buy for the $10 billion, with a B, dollars a year or so that we could generate off of my plan. Now, my plan is a financing plan. I am not suggesting that I should interrupt or reinvent the wheel as far as the charge that has been given to the health fund board. But let me tell you where I'm coming from first philosophically on this. I have in the past been associated with a variety of fiscally conservative causes. I am a defender of business. I agree with Ronald Reagan that the very best social policy is a good private sector job. The more private sector jobs we have in the state, the fewer social problems we have. Mm-hmm. I believe people's sense of self-worth is in many ways associated with their employment.
If they're employed, that's a big boon.
Absolutely. Right. And so I want to do anything I can to increase job formation in this state. That's my first goal. And that's why my relationships with organized labor are very good, because the trade unions and the business community, especially over the last several years, have had a common purpose, and that is to bring more jobs to Oregon. So from a fiscal perspective, that's where I'm coming from. Now, where I depart from much of the conservative ideology is that although I do not go as far as Representative Greenlick does in viewing health care as a human right, I do believe that an enlightened society should furnish health care to its citizens.
Mm-hmm.
I frankly see no difference between protecting citizens from crime, which is an acknowledged role of government, than I do from protecting citizens against disease.
Mm-hmm.
I see absolutely no difference. Or extending to our citizens a basic level of education. I do not believe it is much of a stretch to involve the government in extending to its citizens basic health care, because if we do that, we allow citizens to pursue their own dreams. There are two kinds of burdens. That burden, you know, I cannot imagine the number of people who are stuck in a dead-end job because they need the health care.
Oh, I know so many of them.
Are unable to pursue their dreams, like in the arts or in starting a small business, because they need the health care. The linkage of health care to employment status is a major, major problem from the perspective of the citizen, because it is a constant worry. And I think today most of our residents are painfully aware of how linked their coverage is to their employment status and how precarious that employment status may be, especially in a down economy.
Yes.
So there is that burden, but there is a countervailing burden on business. Historically, health care, ever since World War II at least, was associated and linked with employment status. At first, it was easy to provide fringe benefits because they were not very expensive. But today, with the rising cost of insurance coverage, all you need are another couple rounds of 20 to 30% increases, and businesses just are not going to be able to afford to pay these benefits any longer for their employees. It is literally breaking the back of the small business community.
That's true. And from one like myself who's worked in education, what I've seen at the universities and the community colleges is hiring people at 4.9% FTE. In other words, they do not get any coverage. We are seeing the rise again of a two-tier system, one that is covered and one that is not. And it isn't good for the students, it isn't good for the faculty, it isn't good for the entire institution when that happens.
So both segments have problems. The citizen who has a great deal of stress over the future of healthcare coverage for themselves and their families, and businesses who are not sure how they're going to be able to afford this in the future. And so what I tried to do was meld both concerns together, which has caused very strange things to happen. Business to agree with social advocates, Republicans to agree with Democrats. We've been able to bring people with disparate points of view together around a proposal, which I'd just like to try on.
I have to warn you, though, that many of those things you're saying, I've been saying for 5 years and nobody's listened. I'm not exactly a neutral party, but go ahead.
What I like to do is to describe the proposal and then see what you and your listeners think about this.
Sure.
And I want your listeners to know that I really invite their comments. This is a work in process. I want it to be everyone's. I want to bring disparate groups together and try to do something proactively instead of reactively. What I thought we could do was decouple in Oregon the provision of health care insurance from employment status. My proposal envisions a health care program for every Oregon citizen. That health care program will be at least preventative.
Preventative means so many different things to different people, and just a few ideas would help.
Right, this is my vision.
Okay.
Preventative means being able to go to the doctor once a year or more for a checkup.
Sounds good.
Being able to get an eye exam. To get a dental exam.
Oh, wow. That's big.
Those sorts of things, which are not all that expensive and can save significant costs down the line. So I want to encourage prevention. I also want to cover catastrophic events. I want to cover hospitalization. I also want to cover chronic events. Someone ends up with breast cancer. Most of their treatments are outpatient treatments. I want to be able to provide for those types of coverages. We are asking the Department of Human Services right now to cost out a number of options from a sort of a Cadillac option, I will call it, to a floor option, which I have just described, which would then leave gaps in the middle. My vision and plan would also provide an opportunity for the public or for businesses to go to the markets and to buy supplemental coverages for their employees. Because I have no interest in dumbing down somebody's coverage to a common denominator. I want those who have great plans to be able to retain their plans. My goal is to provide a basic level of coverage to those who do not. I believe the plan will cost approximately $10 billion, with a B, dollars a year. The way we raise the money is from a constitutionally dedicated sales tax for healthcare.
The constitutionally dedicated was an important addition that I'm very glad to hear.
A constitutionally dedicated sales tax for healthcare at about 7% will raise about $6 billion annually. In addition, though, there will be all kinds of general fund savings because businesses that used to be paying for healthcare will no longer be taking deductions. There will be the ultimate in federal matching because we will cover every single possible matchable human being there is, since we will cover all children, all seniors. Anyone who's matchable under this plan is by definition covered.
John Kitzhaber would like to use the Medicare money, and that requires a waiver, does it?
Yes.
So that is what this plan also would do.
Not necessarily. There will be some waivers that would be required from the federal government, but we hope to leave much of the Medicare coverages in place.
Okay.
And again, John Kitzhaber's plans have much to do with delivery of services. And I disagree a little bit with the former governor on approach. My understanding of his view is that we should start all over, figure out how we're going to deliver services first, and worry about financing second. My view is that much of what we do is driven by how we finance the program. So my plan is a financing plan. I'm leaving it up to the health fund board to figure out delivery options.
The roadblock has been the lack of a financing plan.
Absolutely. So we get $6 billion off of the sales tax. We get add-backs from ultimate and federal matching, loss of deductions. We spend a lot of money on the Oregon Health Plan, which we no longer will have to spend because this plan would take its place. We end up under legislative revenues estimates of getting up to about $10 billion. The $10 billion then can go to finance the plan. Now there is a silver lining, though. First, we accomplished providing a basic level of health care for all Oregonians, which is a very laudable goal. But secondly, look at what this does for business. This eliminates 15 to 18% of a business's normal payroll costs, which today are attributable to health care and are climbing constantly. Now, we are the only state on the West Coast that could do this because we are the only state
that lacks a sales tax. Well, Alaska also.
In our region, we're the only state that could do this. Think about it. If you are a labor-intensive employer and you want to find a place to locate, you look at Oregon and you figure we can save 18% of payroll if we build our plant, we build our facility, we build our headquarters in Oregon. What are you going to do? I don't care how many Betsy credits you give out. You will never, ever be able to compete with an opportunity to move to the state and realize a 15 to 18% reduction in payroll. If you do that, and if business reacts as we believe they would, we are not only providing a basic level of health care to all Oregonians, we are bringing so many employers into the state that we are moving towards a full employment economy. We are killing two birds with one stone, providing health care for everyone and providing jobs for whoever needs them.
Let me just mention the public employees too, because, for instance, the city of Corvallis was very eager to accept a resolution about the federal government working toward a universal health care plan, because they have a very good, but no doubt very expensive, health care coverage plan. So the cities, the counties, of course, the educational units from kindergarten on up.
Well, look at what it does for them. Let's say you're on a school board and you're facing that situation where a significant amount of the money that you raise that should be going to instruction is going to health care costs. Okay? This plan would provide the basic plan for everyone. The basic plan goes with everyone, portable to them without regard to their employment, without regard to whether they're employed or not, which means that all the school district now has to buy is any excess policy that provides the difference between the basic plan coverage and whatever coverage amount was negotiated through collective bargaining. So what you're doing is you are drastically cutting the costs of the school district. Those savings can be devoted directly to a number of areas, to textbooks, instruction, to labs.
They might not have to raise the property taxes.
There's another equity reason why this plan would be of benefit, and that is that there is not a proposal other than this one that allows every single beneficiary of healthcare to pay something towards it. Everybody who benefits from healthcare pays something towards it because everybody buys stuff. Everybody. And if you consider a constitutionally dedicated sales tax as your healthcare premium, it's a healthcare premium. That's all it is because it's dedicated to healthcare. Every time you buy something, you're paying towards your healthcare premium. And you're paying a premium that is based on your ability to pay, because it's based on your ability to buy.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, some people think it's regressive because it's the same rate charged to everyone. But I have to tell you, Roberta, I don't know of anything more regressive than a healthcare premium.
Oh, right.
That's charged totally without regard to your ability to pay. So this is a real step towards progressivity. The sales tax is inescapable. Even crooks buy stuff. The illegal economy buys stuff. Visitors buy stuff.
No, some states and some provinces don't charge for, let's say in British Columbia when I lived there, it was children's clothing and not food. But other states have different
exemptions.
Has that been thought about at all?
Yes, there are two ways to go. One way is called a broad-based sales tax, which has very few exemptions. One is a standard-based sales tax, which has many exemptions. An example of a standard-based exemption would be tobacco, alcohol. A lot of those are exempt from sales tax because there are other
taxes.
My numbers are based on a broad-based sales tax, which covers almost everything. The only exemptions would be food consumed in the home. You go
from
to the grocery
store.
They would be shelter, so your rent, mortgage payments, etc., would be exempt. Utilities consumed in the home, so your heat bill, etc., and a few others. And the reason it's so broadly based is because this is, in fact, your healthcare premium. If you're at the lower rung of the economic chart, it's really a good deal for you, because you would have to buy a lot at 7% to make up for $1,000 a month, which is what a normal healthcare benefit would cost. The reason we can do this statewide for, I think, about $300 a month, say, I think we could give what most people get in, you know, $700, $800 a month policies for about $300 a month, because we're now using the magic of capitation. We are covering every single healthy person in the state. Most healthy people do not participate in the healthcare system. They do not pay insurance premiums because they're healthy. They wait until their 30s when they start drawing on the system. Children are very inexpensive to cover.
Yes.
I mean, what's the worst thing that happens to most kids? A fracture? They are very inexpensive to cover, and many of them are uninsured. So what we're doing is we are insuring everyone. Even a child is paying a health care premium, because every time the child buys bubble gum, the child is paying a sales tax. Everybody is paying. We have a huge base that then comes in. And we have to cover everyone from those who need to draw on the system the most to healthy people who rarely draw on the system. So, I mean, you take a typical company that has 500-600 employees. The company's blessing is a curse. The blessing is they have very loyal employees who have been with them for 25 years. The curse is after 25 years, they age, they start needing replacement parts. So they're drawing on the system. their plans become very expensive because their plan consists of a group that is aging and is using the plan. All right, now let's say, though, you group those people in that plan with every living human being who happens to be a citizen in the state of Oregon. Now you have a multitude of healthy people who will rarely draw on the system, combined with those who will draw on the system, and so you lower the per capita cost per person way down.
That's a real charmer of a universal system that many people have not grasped. The goal here, you're developing the ideas, spreading them, hoping to get feedback, and then the legislative session should be considering it. And let me ask, many people, when I've mentioned the possible sales tax, have said, oh, but Oregonians have turned that down however many times.
Well, let's talk about the lack of popularity of a sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
Roberta, I have been involved in every sales tax discussion since the 1980s. I attribute the failure of every single one of those proposals to one simple problem, that every single one of them dumped money into the general fund or backfilled the general fund. And I think Oregonians were not about to accept yet another tax on top of all the other taxes we had. And the suggestions that some taxes would be lowered because a sales tax would be increased rang hollow. Where this proposal differs is that this proposal dedicates a sales tax to fulfill a need that most Oregonians believe is personal to them, their health care. I don't believe there has ever in the country been a proposal to link the provision of health care to a dedicated sales tax. Sales taxes in a vacuum are very unpopular. However, the electorate is terrified of the potential loss of their health care because most people are beginning to understand that it's not enough to say I like the status quo because the status quo is unsustainable. Some people say I like the health care I have for my company right now. Well, you know what? Their company isn't going to be able to provide it for very long with a few more 20% increases. Number two, I believe that the public will realize the benefits in having everybody who benefits from healthcare pay something towards it. And third, we will realize how difficult it is for many Oregonians to achieve their dreams because they are stuck with having to be employed with a certain employer just to keep the healthcare.
This is a very common theme.
Let me mention a couple of these areas. You know, when you go to your doctor's office, doctor usually has two or three people on staff who have one job, and that is to determine eligibility under a myriad of healthcare policies and zillions of forms, etc. The administrative costs sometimes for healthcare can average one or two premiums, two monthly premiums, are consumed in administrative costs. There are very few administrative costs associated with this program. You have a little card that says, I'm an Oregon citizen, and I have the Oregon healthcare plan. That's it. That's all they need. There are no forms. So we're eliminating all kinds of inefficiencies and costs there. And we have something in it for seniors. There are seniors who have said, well, look, why should I pay a sales tax? I already have Medicare coverage. Two reasons. Number one, fewer and fewer doctors are willing to honor Medicare patients. With this plan, seniors will have significantly higher accessibility to doctors. Secondly, we intend to also build into the plan a special benefit for seniors because they already have Medicare coverage. We would like to provide enhanced drug coverage. One of the problems with Medicare coverage, unless they have Part D, is that they sort of have a Pyrrhic victory. You know, they get to go to the doctor sees them, but then they can't afford the drugs.
Another issue is cost control. Sometimes there are ways to prevent overuse of MRIs or other high-tech expensive equipment. This plan probably won't address that, but perhaps the health authority will. What's your feeling about that?
I disagree. I mean, the plan isn't going to address cost control directly because it isn't going to involve a command down system of costs. On the other hand, if the plan is for present health insurers to band together and bid out the provision of the benefits for the Oregon Basic Program, what we envision is we're going to have $10 billion. And the state of Oregon under this plan will say, insurers, private insurers, come on in, combine, as you will, and bid out regional care contracts. Contractually, we expect you to provide the following level of care under this essential benefits package. Would you like to do it? Those that say yes will receive the money, will have a contract to have to provide that level of care, and you know what? they're going to start becoming fairly circumspect about costs. Right now, the insurance companies have no real incentive to minimize costs because they just add up at the end of the year how much it cost and then raise premiums to adjust for that. Mm. Now they'd have a system where we say, here's X dollars. You're signing up for a contract to do Y. You exercise discipline within your organization to make sure that at the end of the day, you can provide this level of care and make a little profit besides.
So you would have a role for the insurance companies in some of that management.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be in the long process of certifying a person and all that sort of thing. That would be gone.
They're automatically certified, but I do not want to reinvent the wheel and substitute a state bureaucracy for a private bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you deal with an insurance company, it's a bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. And I do think that private insurers are set up to do this. This system will require internal discipline. And I believe the people who know best how to save costs should be relied upon to do that. And they're the professionals who are involved in the delivery.
And those are all the providers, physicians, treating a patient.
See, I don't want to legislatively dictate how many MRI machines a hospital is going to have or how often people are going to have MRIs and CAT scans. I would much rather leave that to the professionals who should know better. They're going to have to deliver a certain level of care. They're going to get X dollars for it. Let's depend on the people who know best how to control costs. See, right now, the people who know best how to control costs have no incentive to control costs.
One of the things that has occurred to many of us is this sort of contrary issue of the, quote, tort reform.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always occurred to me that you can have that if you have universal coverage, because if a person is injured just through an honest-to-goodness accident, a slight mistake, if that person knows that, okay, now I've got a terrible handicap, ailment, and I can't get coverage anymore, then you have to sue.
Right.
You don't have any choice.
Right.
But if you know that that coverage is going to be there and that isn't a concern, then it can be a much more reasonable discussion, it seems to me.
Sure. And when you look at out-of-pocket damages, actual damages in malpractice cases, I mean, what's the largest component of the actual damages? It's more medical. To fix what happened. This plan is covering the more medical.
Yeah.
So you're right. Much of the need to have to litigate goes away.
Those two things need to go forward together.
Well, I have to tell you, Roberta, really motivates me. It is so much fun to be able to bring together people who have diametrically opposite points of view and try to find a third alternative that works for everyone. And I am beginning to think, given the interest, that this might actually be one of those third alternatives. And to me, there would be nothing greater, it would be just marvelous, if we could provide health care available to every single one of our citizens and generate thousands of private sector jobs at the same time. I mean, it would rank right up there with the beach bill and the bottle bill. I think it would be in the finest of Oregon's traditions if we could do that.
I like what you're doing. I think it's very refreshing, and it's very refreshing to have it made very public. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
We've been talking with John DiLorenzo, an attorney in Portland who's working with a group of legislators and is developing a very interesting universal health care coverage financing plan. The Health and Healthcare Forum is produced by Roberta Hall and recorded with the aid of Joe Magner of Anabyte Electronics and Recording in Corvallis, Oregon. Theme music was composed by Lori Childers and played by Lori Childers in Kent White.